The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Routine is surprise. The question on this picture, is it an outside corner on that building or is it an inside corner? We can debate that all the time. Workshop time, right? Take your hand and cover the bottom half of the picture. And the top becomes an inside corner. Cover the top part of the picture, and it becomes outside. You can look back and forth a long time. There is an example of something that is interesting, that stretches a child's mind, that relieves boredom. You can give them their personal copy, something that they can put in their desk and or maybe take home and show mom or something like that. That's just one example. I'm sorry I don't have another handout for you. If you want to take notes or something, that's fine. I'll probably be giving some website addresses every once in a while for something like this. I got this off a website that had 65, and they're all very different. Now, be careful with websites like this. Not all the material on it is good, it's an optical illusion website. If you type in something like that, you'll get different things to look at. Some of them are very fascinating, such as a series of, that's kind of a dark display with white lines going through it. Going this way and going that way, which means that there is kind of a white circle at each intersection or a white spot. Your eyes will see that. But if you look closely or if you look away from the picture, and as you look around the picture, you will see black dots appearing in those spots. But when you look directly at the black dot, it changes to white. I mean, it's white. It's a trick of the eye. Another one had a spiral with, it seemed to be different colors. It got wide and went into the center and got narrow. And they were going, well, for me, they were going this way. Then there was some other colors going this way that were just lines. And because of the differences in the colors going the two different ways, then some of the other colors looked different. Oh, it was very strange. I read some comments about it. There's one person that said that she was able to take her computer and take it apart. And she found out, yes, the colors are, they are the same color, but they look yellow and green. They look like they're two different colors. But she was able to take it apart, and it was true. So there's just some examples. And that's kind of what we're going to be doing today, is thinking about examples of way to break up the daily grind. The topic, title, and ideas for it somewhat came from another fellow that's going to be on the second half of the trip when they go down to Texas and Mexico. His name is Chester Weaver, and I've been in his classroom. He's very good at this, and that's why he calls it the routine of surprise. When I taught, I probably didn't make it quite a routine, but he tries to do something every day that's new, interesting, but he has to keep that that has to be a variation also, or it just becomes such a routine. Oh, we're going to have the same thing. We're going to have another optical illusion this morning. No, you don't want to do that. You want to do different things. So we'll talk about some of that. What's our objective? To communicate that learning happens when students' minds are 100% engaged. And surprises are a wonderful way to keep them engaged. They stay on the edge of their seat. You know, what's going to happen next? I was talking to another fellow. He's a bookseller at the workshop we had down in Missouri, a good friend of mine. And he said that when he taught school, the children gave him a little nickname. They called him Mr. Wait and See, because they would come to school and they would say, Mr. Kaufman, what are you going to show us today? What's going to happen today? And he'd say, wait and see. Very typical of parents and teachers, right? Okay. Learning is not a spectator sport. And too often in our schools, we view it that way. And some of our work, we just kind of We end up doing that way, especially if we're a really busy teacher. We want the children to come to class, watch us teach. There isn't much interaction. And go back and do your work. Learning is not a spectator sport. Students do not learn much just sitting in class, listening to teachers, memorizing prepackaged assignments, and spitting out answers. They must talk about what they are learning. They must write about what they are learning. They must relate it to past experiences, and they must apply it to their daily lives. They must make what they learn part of themselves. So our idea today is to break up regular routines with a spatial treat. And it doesn't always have to be done in the morning. Some teachers like to do it right after devotions and get it out of the way and then go back to ordinary stuff. It's probably not the best idea. If you're going to do this type of thing, surprise them about when it's going to happen. Or maybe you as a teacher are just looking for that dead time during the day. And I'm not promoting that you have to do it every day, like Chester Weaver. Partly because I didn't do it that way. It's okay. If you've got the time, the energy, and the ability to find fun things to talk to the class about, that's great. But it's nice if you can do it two or three times a week. And maybe to have a little bunch of these things in your desk somewhere where the children can't get at them. So that when it's 5 minutes till break and everybody's caught up, does that ever happen? And but you have a little bit of dead time there. You say, you know, there's something in current events. Hopefully, you know, that would be for older children. There's something in current events I'd like you all to know about. And maybe a tornado or the flood in Colorado or hurricane. Right now, there is a typhoon that came ashore in India. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced and things like that. And if you've got pictures to show, that's great. But just talking about it, having a little discussion, it really freshens up the mind. Sometimes you find objects in your day-to-day life that inspire you with, you know, this would be good to show the children. Now, one thing I'd like you to think about, and maybe not all of you have devotional time. I'm going to trip over this cord. Maybe not all of you have a devotional time in your school, but if you do, try to think about some of these special props that you come up with along the way as a way to promote God's kingdom. I had a neighbor lady whose husband died, and she got rid of some of his things, and she said, "Lyndon, you build cabinets. Here's his tape measure." Oh, this thing is terribly heavy. Takes batteries. If I use it in my shop, I go through a set, you know, 4 AAA batteries a day. That wouldn't be economical. I was ready to throw it away. But all of a sudden, I thought, you know, I'm a school rep. I go around and visit schools. Is there any way that I could use that? I have devotions sometimes when I come to the schools that I visit, if I'm there in the morning. Sometimes when I'm there in the afternoon, they ask me to do it too. Okay, I said, how can I use this? Well, and I don't have a board to demonstrate here, and that would be part of it too, is don't be afraid to draw or write. You know, we get this, it comes with being an adult, where we're scared to get out of our comfort zone a little bit and admit that we're not a good artist, but we like to draw anyway, and we'll just put something up here. And the children, oh yeah, that really helped me understand something. So what I do is I start writing the words easily distracted. And I do all sorts of artwork on it. I make a capital E with an eyeball hanging down and a glove on the middle part of the E and a boot on the bottom. And just typical things that children do sometimes when they don't want to do their work. You ever see paper come back and it's got an A, and then the bottom of the A or the S goes into a spiral. The eyes have smiley faces above them, and it's okay if you're getting done with your work. It's probably not proper way to hand in a proper paper, though. And what I'm trying to get across to the children is that We can be easily distracted. Now I'll use the Bible story of Peter when he jumps out of the boat and he's walking on the water to Jesus, and things are going well till he notices the winds boisterous and the waves, and oh dear, got his eyes off of Jesus and down he sank. But I tell them that throughout the beginning, and then I show them this, and I said, you know, this would make a great show and tell thing. You'd bring it to school. You'd like to show it to the other children, and it does things like that. Sometimes the whole class jumps when I do that. You did very well this morning. They're intrigued with that. Little children, middle-aged children, old children, we're intrigued with that. But then I tell them, okay, you had it for show and tell, and it was a great show and tell, and the teacher left you keep it in your desk. Halfway to first break, you're tempted, and you reach up, and you grab this thing, and you hear this. And the teacher does what? Comes and takes it away. And children all smile and nod at that point. Teachers must have a universal thing about. We know what it takes to maintain order in the classroom. We know when an object is good for an object lesson or a show and tell thing, but we also know there's a time to study and work too. Here's another curiosity that as I was about to leave the other day, getting ready, and I'd done some studying just that day, happened to open a drawer to, I don't know, I might have been looking for my passport or something. Found this. My stepdad built these. You can look at it later. I'll lay out here on the table. It looks like it's not connected, and yet it all is. And if you are asking a woodworker to make these, make sure he can cut very accurately, because if you start getting off a 32nd of an inch, it goes all haywire. So, just odd things like that. Maybe these metal horseshoe things have a ring or something like that. The metal puzzles, wood puzzles that come apart and are a challenge to put back together or get apart. Those are all things that can be brought out and shown at various times. I'm trying to give you some ideas to stimulate your thinking about small things that you can do. When you see something, okay, as a teacher, you're teaching. When you see an object, do you ever immediately go into teacher mode and say, how could I use that in the classroom? I did teach. I haven't taught for quite a few years now. I still substitute some. I'm a minister now, though. One of the things I try to do is when I look at what's happening around me, I try to think, is there an illustration? Can I use this in a sermon? Can I find a way to reinforce a biblical truth? Okay? Any thoughts, comments about anything we've had so far? I get to rattling on. I forget to ask for. Don't be afraid to talk. We want to eliminate dead time. So think about the end of class time. Maybe it's just about break time. If nothing's happening and they're not busy with doing schoolwork, that's when their orneriness shows up and creates havoc. Maybe the last 5 minutes of school, we need to be willing to say, I can have math drill for this. Math drill can be a surprise thing. Now, they're not as excited about something like that as maybe the tape measure, but still it's something different. And if you organize your class, your students properly, you can get something like that going pretty fast if they know what to expect. Okay, group A stands over here, group B stands over here. We're going to flip the flashcards and, but you have to have organization beforehand. They have to know and to get in their place quickly, not to be told multiple times to do it, or you're going to use up the time just trying to get started and you won't get anything done. Children will enjoy doing something like that quickly if they know that you're behind it and you're ready. You've got the flashcards ready and you don't have to go hunting for them. Okay. What about things that are happening around you that you can bring in? Now, sometimes things happen that we didn't know were going to happen. And We had our day all planned out. But if our eyes and ears and thoughts are open, we'll see that this is a learning experience or an opportunity, a learning opportunity. I need to shuck what I was going to do for the day or next period or whatever. One of the things that's mentioned here, this, I'm using some notes that Chester Weaver has. They evidently had a hot air balloon land in a field beside the school. Can you imagine doing math while there's a hot air balloon blasting away outside? No. You say, hey, let's go outside and watch this thing. Here's a line you have to stay behind. We have to stay out of these people's way. But we're just going to go out and watch. And you're going to have to monitor the children's attention. Perhaps somebody will come over and talk to them, if that would be the case. You know, I'm just using that as an example. But children's attention span isn't real long, especially depending on the age level. And maybe a time when you say, okay, we're going to go in, and it's not over necessarily. Something like that happened while I was teaching. We had an empty lot across the road from where my house is. And a foundation and basement went in, so we knew there was a house going to be built there. But then we found out that it was a modular house. It would be brought in on the semi in four pieces. It's a full two-story house, so it was brought in four semi loads. And at that time, we had a school bus at our school. We don't now. And I was a school bus driver, so it worked out really well. My wife called me and said, the semis are here. And I took my class, and we jumped in the school bus and drove to my house and just sat in the driveway. I think it was fairly chilly, so we just sat in the bus, turned the bus sideways or something like that. And they washed out the windows as a crane set those pieces. Think that was interesting? Sure was. It's a lot better than doing language arts. But you still have language arts to do. So, okay? He mentions also a four-wheeler safety program. I don't know anything about that, but maybe you have something like that in your communities. I don't know. Where somebody will come in and talk about that. Seems like a lot of our farmers and stuff, they have four-wheelers, and we hear of accidents from time to time. And it doesn't hurt for their friends that don't live on farms to know about it too, because they end up going and visiting, and okay, we're going to go out and ride the four-wheeler. Okay, you get the idea. Invite in an ambulance, fire company, the police to talk. They're glad to come. At least they are in our community. I can't speak for all communities, but I know they are in our community. Our fire department loves to come out. They'll show the children how far it'll shoot water. They've got some pretty impressive stuff. They'll let them get on the fire truck. Now, my daughter, who teaches first and second grade, she's found that it's better if she goes to the fire station, which isn't far away, and she has to arrange that with a telephone call, and they will give a little tour if they are not out on call. It's always subject to that. Very interesting for the children. One thing that we had, which was very special, was to have what we call life flight, the helicopters that fly from the hospitals. We have three of them stationed just north of us, about 30 miles. And they flew one down and landed it on our school grounds and gave tours. And that was very interesting. The disappointment that day was that the last group, and I think it was the high schoolers, so I was glad it was them instead of the little children. I should back up in my explanation. They have to keep one helicopter on base at all times. They have three. But when they came down to our school, one helicopter was out on a call. And they had been there for quite a while when suddenly they got the call that the second helicopter was having to leave on a call. So they had to get that one back to the base. So the last group, the high schoolers, did not get to go through the helicopter. I think that was the group. That was very interesting. And those guys were out to show off too, which made it more interesting for the children. When they took off, I've never seen a helicopter do this before. But they about turned that helicopter on its side and made a circle around our school property in the air and then sizzled out of there so fast. I didn't know helicopters went that fast, but it's because they were down low and children could feel the wind from the rotors and things like that. That types of thing, if you can, now that was planned. You know, some things happen and we didn't know they were going to, and we make adjustments for that. But those types of things the children can really look forward to. And in that situation, see, I wasn't teaching at that time, but I was there for part of it at least, because they told the parents about it. And parents with little children even showed up to at least see it land and take off. So, okay. Do you have fire drills at your school? That can be a surprise. maybe not so much in a homeschool setting, but in your school settings in our state, fire drills are necessary. We have to have them, so many of them a year. This notes that in this school, evidently in Chester School, one of the board members tied a string to the fire alarm bell to one of the door handles and didn't tell anybody about it. So I don't know that the teachers knew about it either. So whenever the first person that opened the door, it flipped the fire bell switch and things happened after that. Okay, another thing. Do you know of someone who is on the mission field? Is home on furlough? Maybe they have some pictures or things like that are native to that country, the type of things they wear there. Will they come and talk to the class? Maybe to the whole school, but you got to think too of just your class, and different things appeal to different age levels. Some things, okay. Take this here. First and second grader may find this somewhat interesting, but probably not near as interesting as five, sixth, and seventh grade child will. Ditto for the puzzles and things like that. Those types of things. Again, this would be more for older children. They're going to catch on to this a lot quicker than small children. One thing I say about first and second graders is that just going to school is great to them. There's a surprise every day when the teacher helps them learn a new letter or something like that. You need new things that are out of the routine, the regular routine of lessons for them also, but it's probably not as important as to, I'm going to say, the fifth, sixth, and seventh graders, eighth graders. In our school, we go through high school for our students, and I noticed when I taught 5th, 6th, and 7th grade that those children think they have been in school forever and that they will be in school forever, and they don't really care. And we as teachers need to help that attitude problem. That was my goal while I was in there, is to change your attitude about liking school. Anybody have something you want to add? Ideas of your own along any of these lines? Like to hear from you.
Sometimes just changing something in your classroom.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I tried once a week to turn the clock upside down.
Okay.
Now, the clock will always notice, but some of the other things that might take them all day. Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right. And that, my next point kind of goes along with that. It's a different story, but it's kind of got the same idea. You can do this in math or language arts. You can put something on the board. Story problem, paragraph for language arts, put mistakes in it on purpose. You, the teacher. Then divide up into teams, or if it's a small enough class, it may have to be individuals. And you have so many minutes, you got 3 minutes to find the mistakes in this paragraph. And when you think you have them all, raise your hand. First person that raises their hand gets to talk first. But they're more likely to not have found all the mistakes. So, and I got this off of I'm sorry about this, but I don't have the website where I got this from. I wish I did. She was a very good, she seemed very sensible some websites, it's kind of pie in the sky teaching. But she seemed very sensible in what she was doing. And she says, here's how. Organize teams of three students and ask them to work together quietly and raise their hands when they think they have found all the mistakes. After the first team signals it's done, give a bit more time and then have teams indicate with their fingers, together on the count of three, the number of mistakes they found in the work. So if there's seven mistakes up there on their board, and they say, we're all done, then you say, one, two, three, and all the teams put their hands up with however many mistakes they think they saw. Okay? Then you can check. And they're not looking at each other and say, oh, he's saying seven. I only found six. So the temptation then is to put up more fingers. Okay? So you do it on the count of three. Get your hands up. Okay, the team that found the most starts to describe the mistakes until another team disagrees politely or until they are finished. They may be all right. But if they've made a mistake, and there again, that's teaching good relationship issues. Can you disagree with somebody politely? Some of us have issues with that, right? You're not right. we come out very forcefully and are telling somebody they're wrong. And there's an opportunity to teach them how to get along in a group and discuss politely, not argue, have a discussion. That was a good point about the clock, you know, doing something like that, turning something around, changing room decor a certain way and saying, what's different in here today? Can you find it? We have, occasionally we've had Grandparents' Day, or sometimes we call it open house. I'm hoping to get in on it. It's going to be about the very day I get back from workshop trip this time at our school. And that's something they've done there, is they have like a treasure hunt. They give you a piece, the parents or grandparents, a piece of paper at the entrance to our school, and they go from room to room trying to find certain things in the room. And the students have helped prepare for that and do a lot of the work on that. That kind of a day there is another type of surprise thing that relieves some boredom. But it also, remember that these things tend to keep you from getting as much work done too. So, again, a steady diet of it in a big way, that's not good. You're not going to get your schoolwork done. But we need just enough of it to add spice to the day and to the students' lives that keeps them coming back for more, wondering what's going to happen next. And probably one thing that my students would remember, they've mentioned it years afterwards, is we had good discussions. And I know that I went far afield from the original subject we were working on. But I like to read a lot, and so one thing reminds me of another, and different one. I mean, they really got into the discussion thing and asking how things work and what happens here and things like that. And that worked well. Okay, we talked about having teams to do that mistake-finding mission. Have you ever tried to divide into teams and do something like that and find they're in a lot of confusion? And it takes a lot of effort and time to get that done. This lady suggested some ways to practice teamwork. She says, doing project learning and other team-based work without prior training can lead to lots of dead time. You can nip much of it in the bud by teaching collaboration skills, that's a big word, means working together, before projects get started. You don't need to use an activity related to your subject area to teach teamwork. So some time, and this would be a good idea for just like doing it for kind of like an art class. And it's teaching teamwork, and you can use it then later in their schoolwork. Here's how. You give a team of students a pair of scissors, two sheets of paper, 10 paper clips, and a 10-inch piece of tape. I'll read that again. Pair of scissors, two sheets of paper, 10 paper clips, and a 10-inch piece of tape and ask them to build the tallest freestanding tower in 20 minutes. I better be checking and see when my time's up here. Okay. How high do you think you could make one? 10 paper clips, 10 inches of tape, 2 sheets of paper, and you're probably going to want to cut that paper into strips some way and get the, you know, I guess I would probably start off with something that would like this and maybe like this. So I had a base, and then but paper's kind of flimsy. Now, the fellow that's teaching high school for us, he's a brain at this types of things and finding them. He can find them even if he doesn't think them up. Our youth went to his place after church one Sunday night. And he gave them, this is another idea for the classroom, he gave them a package of spaghetti and a bag of marshmallows. Big marshmallows, and they could cut them up if they wanted to. And to build the biggest, tallest freestanding tower they could do with that. The youth thoroughly enjoyed that. And my son was in the team that beat. They had something 7 feet tall with that, which fell over as soon as they won. but just the joy of building that and, you know, seeing the other teams over here, you know, they're working on it. Now, what she suggests when you do this is only have one team build at a time, and the other teams are in a circle around that team watching. Puts a little pressure on. The others are watching how I'm doing this, so I'm going to try to do my best. And when they're done, the teams that are watching are allowed to make comments. Now, again, you are trying to come across with the idea of teamwork and working together as a class, not just as teams, and getting along. While half of the teams are building the towers, I guess you could have more than one, but the other half of the students stand around them in a circular fishbowl as silent observers. Afterward, you talk to the observers and tell them how they're going to do things, but the observers are to give a positive comment before they give a negative comment. Now, this is kind of an interesting exercise, and I think it could turn into a great art class type of thing, but it's teaching values. You're creating worldview here. Where they would say things like, I liked that they, whatever. And I wonder if they could have also, see how neutral that statement is. It's not intimidating and, well, they should have done it this way or something like that. They have to give a positive comment first and before they give anything negative where they say, I think they could have done better in this department. And once you're done with that, they switch places. So now the people that were being critical are in the fishbowl building, you know. And the others get to, you ever notice that when you're good at something and you're watching someone else do it, that you think, oh, I could do that better. You know, part of my life, I ran a backhoe for a couple years. And then I'd watch somebody else run a backhoe and, oh, why doesn't he do it this way? You know, you understand what I'm talking about. And you're teaching children how to react in a positive way in a situation like that with a godly attitude. Not okay. Any questions about that or something similar? I'm always looking for some new stuff. Things that you've done. Art class is a great way to have some surprise things there. Most children look forward to it. I, as a teacher, dreaded art class. I didn't. Coming up with ideas for art was a chore to me, and it probably shouldn't have been. We have lots of resources. There's books back on the table to give us ideas. It just takes time, and that's something we often do not have much of. If you are losing your students and a class time, have them do something that's called a quick write, where they write down quickly a paragraph that summarizes what's just been taught. Now, that's going to take some practice, too, because you go, oh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to, what to write. And again, you're not going to expect a first or second grader probably to do that. But third grade on up, I would expect varying levels of ability in doing that, but they should be able to do something, even if it's just two sentences about what we were going over. Or, and I think this could get more exciting for children, compose a quiz question that I might ask on the subject the material we were just on. And I might use it on the quiz if it's a good one. Something like that. All of a sudden, what would the teacher use as a good question about the material we just covered? You will engage their minds in learning at that point because they're going to start really paying attention. They don't know when you're going to pull this kind of stuff, when you're going to do it, and it's going to be something that stimulates the thinking. For primary grade students, you could ask some questions for them to answer. If you're having them do a quick write, you could say, what was most interesting about, you know, whatever subject you were on? What was confusing about it? What was the clearest thing you understood? You don't have to ask all these questions, but you can ask some of them and ask different ones different times. What was boring about it? And that's going to differ with children. Boys find things interesting that girls don't, and vice versa. So you're not going to get 100% response that this was boring. Some people are going to think it's very interesting. What did this make you think of in your life? And see, you're building, when you ask questions like that and have them write stuff down, you're building within the child the ability to think things through logically, sensibly. If that child someday has to stand up and speak to people at a CLE workshop, it's going to help them. Just have a Sunday school class or be a teacher. These skills are going to be things that really help that child then. But you're just building little tiny building blocks way back when they're a child. That was for primary students. Here's how for intermediate grade students and above. Try some prompts such as the following, or develop your own. Summarize what you have heard. That's simple. Just write a little paragraph. Summarize what you have heard. Predict an exam or quiz question I could ask based on this material. And here's another one, probably for older students. Defend one of the positions taken during the prior discussion. Can you tell why you think that way? How can you prove that or get the rest of us to believe that the way you think is a good opinion? So there's some ideas for that. We often avoid giving these quick write things, these types of assignments, because it takes a lot of grading. And teachers that do it, and do it a lot, she gives a suggestion for that. She says, tell the students to underline, let's just say with a green pen, a special color, underline with a green pen the one that they want the teacher to read to the class. So you may have done 3-5 of these a week, and you can't read them all next class time or at the end, on Friday or whenever you're planning on doing it. But they're supposed to underline the one that they want done, and some teachers actually have them write a few sentences about why they want that one read. That gives some other ideas. And then if you have extra time, read some of the others. See, as children hear other children's thoughts and ideas about a subject that you have discussed in class, it's not just the teacher coming through, it's a learning experience that's working together. So these are ideas for keeping the surprise factor in there. These are not things that you do just day after day after day. They're things that you can stick in to spice it up a little bit and make things a little different. Any questions? Any ideas from you? fairness cup. That's another idea where you would put like popsicle sticks in a cup on your desk with each student's name in. And when you're asking questions in class time, you pull a stick out and whoever's name's on it, that's who gets asked the question. Now, as I thought about that, I thought, what does the child do, the first one that got called on? Does he relax? So every once in a while, maybe you need to put all the popsicle sticks back in and twirl the cup around or do something like that so that they don't know if it's going to be them again or what. Do try to mix it up and make sure that all children get a chance to answer in class so that it's not just a few. But that keeps it very fair. The teacher should not be able to know which one she's pulling out, so don't mark one with a red pen on the back side or something like that. But they don't know who's going to answer the next question, and they're a little more apt to pay attention in class. You can use all sorts of pictures that I think of like Norman Rockwell pictures and the detail that's in there. Can you find this and that in there? We went to the library before at our school and brought back to the school appropriate I Spy books, something for the children to look at in their spare time or free time, things like that. But you can do that with a poster sometimes. Or ask the children to find so many items in the room that start with a certain letter. They'll surprise you. And therein lies a point. If you expect the child to be surprised and to show surprise when you do something like this, how do you react when they bring something that surprises you? Are you willing for them to see you with a surprised expression on your face? Do you react properly? Or are you too adult for that? That you can't relate to the children on their level. They're delighted when they see, I haven't seen anything like that before. Justin, where did you find that? Is that your parents? That's really neat. And it doesn't hurt to make over a situation like that. Now, you can go to extreme to where pride is lifted up and that sort of thing. We don't want to do that. But we want to rejoice with others that bring in surprises too. You shouldn't have to do all the work. If they get the feel for it, they may bring some things to class that surprises you. Now, they can bring live creatures sometimes that are a bit too surprising. My daughter teaches first and second grade and has for several years now. She was an aide for 2 years, and I think this is her fourth year as full-time teacher. Last year, one of the boys, actually be a cousins, be her cousin and a half, brought a turtle, was able to get some turtles. And he had one at home, and he brought one to school. It's a snapping turtle, too. So they can stick a stick in and pull him halfway out before he lets loose. Just a small one. But they've had that in the classroom. The children enjoy feeding him, doing whatever with that turtle. Then the youth the other evening this year had a treasure hunt of some sort. They were trying to come up with the oddest thing of whatever. And somebody went out and bought a gerbil. Gerbil, I think. Something, some rodent of that nature. And they said, Kayla, don't you need this in your classroom? So now she has one of those in her classroom. And the children enjoy that. Now, it's more work for Kayla. She has to make sure it stays clean, it's watered, it's fed. What do you do with it during the summer? Things like that. But the children enjoy it. It is a way to encourage the children to get done with their work. And you can go back and the table is separate from the work area. So it isn't something that detracts from their lessons, hopefully. Story time. I love to read stories to children or adults, doesn't really matter. I like to read stories. And we'll work on that a little more this afternoon when we talk about telling stories, and I'm going to talk about reading stories there. But the idea of having story time, try to find books that are appropriate to the age level of your children. We want to have good literature. We want to have something that is upbuilding. There's many books out there. And try not to overshoot their age level. However, it doesn't hurt for a child's mind to be stretched a little bit. So pushing them a little bit doesn't hurt any. I have a niece who's... Go ahead.
After you've done that, I wonder if you have some good ideas about Thanksgiving, getting children involved in Thanksgiving.
Okay. Let's just go into that right now. Ideas for Thanksgiving. You're saying to help them with a thankful spirit, right? Okay. Well, I'll open it up first. I don't like to just answer immediately. Anybody have something you've done? One thing we've done at our school before is we go and rake leaves for older people in our congregation. It's about that time of year. Now, I know our Thanksgiving is closer, and it doesn't have to be right at Thanksgiving time, but and to show the children, you've got strong, healthy bodies, and you can rake these leaves. I'm thinking of one couple in our church, Vilas is his name, Vilas and Mabel. They're old and can't get out, and there's no way they could rake leaves. But you can. Be thankful for the way your bodies work, the way that you can, and it gives them time off from their school lessons. They can play in leaves, you know, take a tarp along and pile it in there. You can carry it with a tarp very easily if you need to move the leaves to a pile or something. That's one way we've done that. Am I stirring anybody's thinking? Can anybody else relate something you've done to help with a thankful spirit and your children? Yeah, we've done that, and with our high school students, went to a soup kitchen, and that really gave the high schoolers a new perspective of what they have to be thankful for as they watch those people come through that are homeless or, you know, otherwise down and out, and that was very good for them. We do have the opportunity where I live, I don't know that we've ever done this, where we could take some of our older students to, we have about the same distance, 2.5 hours, I suppose, 2 to 2.5 hours east or west, and we can go to a center for CAM, Christian Aid Ministries, and we could sort clothes or medicines or things like that. We haven't done that, though, but that if you have a sorting place for something like that, that would be another way that you could. And it looks like we're running out of time, so I'm going to leave my folder open. There's some websites if you're interested in optical illusion things. There's some websites there if you want to copy some things down. Feel free to come up and play with a tape measure if you want, or look at the wood puzzle type of thing. You're dismissed.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.